Hey, everybody, welcome back to Gear 30 on the Blister Podcast Network, where we are very proudly based out of Elevation Hotel in Mount Crested Butte, Colorado. I'm Jonathan Ellsworth, and you can check out everything we're doing and reviewing over at blisterreview.com. At Blister Summit 2024, which was also headquartered in Elevation Hotel, we got an amazing state of the union on the present and future of ski boot design from three people with a wealth of experience in this world. We are talking about the renowned boot tinkerer, Hoji, Atomic Ski Boots global manager, Matt Manzer, and Greg Klein, who is the president of Willie Ski and Snowboard Shops. The conversation includes their thoughts on how BOA ski boots have been received and performed so far. We get Hoji's take on the new Dynafit Ridge Pro boot. And yes, as the title suggests, we do talk about sex and ski boots. I think that might be a first in the history of ski boot conversations. I don't know. And we also talk about when weight is and isn't a major consideration in boot design. We talk about what to do if your feet get cold in your boots, whether we'll see BOA dials on the upper cuffs of boots, and more. And folks, if you like, you can also watch the video of this conversation over on our YouTube channel, and we'll include a link to that channel in the show notes of this episode. This episode is presented by our Blister Plus membership, which comes with an insanely good deal on outdoor injury insurance. So if you get hurt skiing or snowboarding or mountain biking or a whole host of other activities, you get covered up to $25,000 per incident. And that includes medical evacuations. It works for anyone, anywhere in the world. It works anywhere in the world. Again, if you get hurt during a whole slew of outdoor activities. And honestly, it really does amount to something like an IQ test. So folks, get your insurance card. If you have insurance, go check out what your deductible is. Go take a look at your max out-of-pocket costs. That's what you're going to have to pay if and when one of those injuries sneaks up on you. I know this firsthand because I have had that experience where I've had to write that check for $8,000, even though I do have insurance, but I've got that pesky high deductible and that higher max out-of-pocket stuff. And anyway, that's why we care so much about this. We don't want you to get financially wrecked after you get physically wrecked skiing or snowboarding or mountain biking or kayaking, etc. Plus, with the Blister Plus membership, you also get a bunch of discounts on gear. You can email us to get our personalized gear recommendations from Blister reviewers. And there's also a sweet discount on the Blister Summit. And so you can use that for next year's Blister Summit, where you can come meet and ski with people like Hoji and Matt Manzer and Greg Klein. So a whole lot of stuff, a whole lot of value going on with that Blister Plus membership. We'll include a link in the show notes of this episode. And so go check it out and become a Blister Plus member today. And now let's talk about sex and ski boots with Hoji, Matt Manzer, and Greg Klein. Here we go. Well, everybody, welcome to whatever day it is of Blister Summit 2024. This is day two, I'm being told, and I think it's Tuesday. Okay, we got our bases covered. We're gonna be talking about ski boots this session. And this is pretty fun. Greg Klein has appeared on Gear 30, as well as at previous Blister Summits. Hoji has invited himself on many a Blister Summit panel, but we're happy to have him back. But for the first time, ladies and gentlemen, oh wow. Right in the middle. How's that video? What are we doing for that video edit? I don't even know.
We're gonna roll with it.
Are you more of a rosé guy? The rosé is very good. A little bit of red. Okay. Hey, I've got a more full red.
Okay.
And then a white.
I'll go white.
Okay. Wow.
Do you guys want some?
You good?
I'll take some.
You got nothing right down there.
Okay. Yeah.
I came prepared, unlike everyone else.
Oh, gee.
With backups, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where was I?
My name's Matt.
This is Matt. So, not the first time we've ever had some drinks in a published conversation, but Matt Manzer, you might know Matt from like 30 episodes of a very deep dive on ski boots from the Gear 30 podcast. Matt's first time in Crested Butte.
First time.
Matt's first time at the Blister Summit. Happy to have you here.
Thanks.
My pleasure. Very excited to be here.
So, let's do this. Ski boots. Cheers. We're going to cheers because, as Greg said, we're just throwing a grenade right away to start this conversation. His words. You may remember at last year's Blister Summit, we did an entire ski boot panel that was largely focused on a thing called BOA. You've probably never heard of that. It's been a year, and I wanted to begin by just saying, like, how has it been going? And there were big questions about durability. There were questions of, was this just a fad? There were questions of when skiers actually got in these boots, would they immediately just lose interest? I kind of thought we'd see about getting a State of the Union. And Greg Klein, I thought we would start with you, owner of Willie's Ski Shop.
Do you want to start with repairs or problems or where it...
How's it going?
It's going great. I mean, people are coming in looking for it because it's the newest tech. There's also some other things out there. I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but you know, we had a polling of about 120 ski shops, and BOA came in second, which was surprising considering the other tech that was ahead. But with BOA, people are thinking it's the perfect fit, and it's just a mechanism. The cable is really the driving force behind that. So I don't know how to... People are interested in a better wrap, mm-hmm. but I also see problems because people think it's the one-hit wonder. And like in snowboard boots, when we fix BOAs, it's because they're overcranked. You know, they have a low-volume foot. They're like, this is the boot. It's just going to tighten, 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 and eventually you run out of room for that cable. So one that got jammed and one was just over-tightened, you know, and wouldn't release. So two issues... with the issues as far as what people are looking for, I mean, it's still hot. You're going to see more next year already. So, BOA's great. There are warranty issues.
But you were saying one of the things you were seeing is somebody with a foot that was effectively too small for the shell.
So a brand, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus because I buy from them and I like my discounts. You know, they're going, well, you can get, you know, 120 width and you can now put a 98 width foot in there and crank out the difference. And that's just not how boots work. That's not how boot walls work, how they compress, you know. So the BOA is just a mechanism. Everybody's like, oh, it fits better. Well, all the new boots are coming out. They better fit better than the last ones. Otherwise, there was no reason to redesign them.
Yeah.
The BOA is just a mechanism, you know? So you'll see more BOAs, but you'll also see more counterfeits. When I say counterfeit, a different way of tightening a cable system. You know, all the touring boots out there, they have cables, but very few have BOAs anymore.
Matt, from Atomic's point of view, mm-hmm. how has, I think we can just call it year one of being on the market, yep. how has it gone from your perspective?
It's gone super well, to be honest. As Greg said, BOA is like the new hot thing that people are at least interested in, curious about, you know? We were one of the few brands that actually launched both a new boot with buckle and also a BOA option. Mm-hmm. So people could see, you know, how does the new shell fit with both of these closure systems, you know, and compare them side by side. And for us, it was honestly a resounding success with BOA, to the point where in 24, 25, next year's Hawks Ultra Extendeds are BOA only. Like, the buckle option just didn't move, to be honest. Like, there was such a high demand for the BOA boots that we just switched to just offering BOA in that particular mold series for next year. So for us, it's just been a success in every sense of the word.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you want to add anything to this conversation, Hoji?
If only someone would try and achieve a way to reduce volume inside the boot without compressing the shell, that would be nice.
Like a liner?
Maybe.
We should talk later.
We will.
This just became like a David Mamet script. Like, yeah, I don't know what just happened, but I like it. Do you want to keep that going?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have really much personal experience in the brand. I work for has kind of gone in the alternative, a cable system, but not the BOA, just because they found another supplier that they could work with. And from their perspective, it was the BOA kind of way that it worked is the BOA company would kind of, you would give them your product and they would put it on. Mm-hmm. And it was very, you couldn't, they didn't like the fact that you could have requests to do it in a different way. So that's ultimately why they went with another manufacturer. But I agree with these, your guys' experiences. Like it's just a different system, and the market will, the consumer group, like the success will speak, and for the results out there. And yeah, it seems like a nice feature to have. But I haven't personally, like, other than trying on other brands' boots, I haven't had much experience. So yeah, cable, what do they say in Austria? Kabel Salat. Cable salad. So
is that what they say in Austria, Matt? Yeah.
Apparently. Yeah.
That's the translation of a rat's nest.
Wow. Okay. I don't know. I'm just in the boat.
All the cables.
Let's switch topics.
Maybe this goes
quick. I don't know.
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not. That's probably the right answer. Yeah. Weight. We talk about it a lot at Blister. I want to ask both, and we'll go. I want to ask manufacturers. From what you all are seeing and working on, do we think manufacturers are more obsessed with weight, and that usually means reducing weight on boot products, less obsessed than perhaps they were a year or two or 5 years ago? And then I'm going to ask the follow-up, are you getting feedback, intel, whatever, that the customer is more or less obsessed with bringing ski boot weights down? So let's start with what we think the manufacturer perspective is.
I think some categories are always going to be weight obsessed. Like, the more we dive into the touring world, people will be just consciously aware of how much their gear weighs because they're the ones bringing it up to the top of the mountain. But when it comes to resort boots or alpine boots specifically, having a lightweight product is definitely less and less of a a request. You know, people are realizing lightweight boots were very interesting when they first came out, but then they started to realize, well, if we're making them lighter, something's has come out of these, right? And so we as a brand, at least on the Atomic side, we've been putting the weight back into certain boots just to make sure we deliver on the skiing performance side of things, because that was one of the first things that really suffered when you start to go super light with pure alpine resort focused boots. So when we launched the second generation of Hawx Ultra, like that was the first generation of Hawx Ultra was like the first real lightweight alpine boot, right? And so when we made the second generation, the resounding feedback was, hey, can you make this a little bit more stable? I'm missing some of the horsepower that I used to have in my, you know, older boots, and I'd like to have that back. And so every year we've been kind of making a new Hawx boot or even a Hawx XTD, the extended boots. They've all gotten a little bit heavier because we're reinforcing key zones more just so they can ski well. And this means the weight tends to go up, you know? So from the alpine side of things, things got a little bit heavier. Touring boots will always try to stay in their kind of classifications. At Atomic, we break the touring world down into three nice and easy groups. You know, you've got this kind of free ride touring, the heavier stuff on one side of the equation. You've got super light, more uphill focused on the other side. And you've got the kind of general purpose, do it all in the middle. Each of those categories is ultra obsessed with having the right weight for their category, right? Mm-hmm. So in that sense, weight is still a talking point, but they're trying to find what is the right weight for how they ski and how it pairs well with the binding and the ski that they've got, you know? So in one sense, it matters for touring for sure, but as we more you get into the resort stuff, alpine, chairlift specific, it's becoming less of a requested thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
Performance is always going to be the main driver on the resort boots when it comes to less or more. People will want more performance 9 times out of 10.
Coach?
The categories, I mean, that's always the way the manufacturers kind of look at things. And I'm obviously the disruptive force in many ways in this kind of general purpose product to try and, you know, find that right weight, not be so light that you can't ski on anything and not be too heavy to get to where you want to go. So it's definitely it's a balance, and I think we're getting, like, everything's kind of it's becoming clearer and clearer with every year that goes by, where, you know, like, we figured it out in skis, I'd say, and bindings, of course, but the boots, yeah, it's still comes down to what percentage of use is uphill or downhill in that mid category. Of course, alpine, like, I mean, just having that mass on your feet just adds so much stability and, like, a damping effect. And you're never gonna walk except to the bar or whatever here. So it doesn't matter. So of course, like, I agree with that, what Matt has said on the alpine side of things. I don't see why they would, you know, like, the general consumer in that category would benefit from a lighter boot, because they're just going to bounce off everything.
Hoji, quick question. For the scheming you're currently doing and have been doing with boots, because I think this kind of ebbs and flows a bit. There are times, I was talking with Cody today, and he was like, yeah, I used to be trying to save every gram possible for going uphill. And he's like, I just am less obsessed about that than I used to be. And so I think it's fair that at different times we try different ends of that kind of weight spectrum. So for you, you know, in the last maybe 12 to maybe 24 months, do you find yourself thinking about how do I remove that weight from the boots you are most interested in skiing and working on and putting out to the world? Is that become more, are you more weight conscious or less these days?
I mean, my approach at this moment is for my personal use, like I'm pretty I don't know, I'm comfortable with, like, I like the two liner system, and like mm-hmm. if the shell can provide the performance mm-hmm. at a good weight, and I have a lightweight liner that's a couple hundred grams lighter for really ski touring. And this is really like a prosumer, like it's, yeah, I mean, everything's so expensive, but, and then a heavier liner that has more a damping effect, and just kind of, it adds a lot to these super rigid shells that we have. And you get a bit of the weight back for the downhill performance. So for my personal use or whatever, and I know that's not a realistic approach for manufacturers, of course, I find that that's allowing me to use the shells that I want in a wider range of use. That's nothing new. I've been doing, a lot of people have been doing that for a while. But yeah, it's kind of interesting, like changing the liner, you can really change how that boot
yeah.
performs for certain activities.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Greg.
Okay. You know, it goes, like Matt was saying, it goes by category. I always think there's going to be a designer out there trying to win the ISPO award in the touring section until they go negative, right? It's going to be filled with helium, or this year we took another 3 grams off. But that's Xanadu. When you get to, you know, real usable stuff, Alpine, and then getting into racing, I can't tell you the last time I've had a customer mention, this is too heavy. I can tell you Matt's original Ultra, Hawks Ultra, I had a lot of people mentioning how light it was, but then you take away performance. So the shells have to be, like he said, the right weight when it comes to the boots. So the heavier you go with racing boots, the more energy transfer. And so people really don't shop weight. They shop comfort when we're talking Alpine. And I don't sell any touring, so I know customers will come in and ask for that. But if you're talking resort, hybrid boots even, because hybrid boots are more concerned with the experience going downhill, in my opinion, mm-hmm. you need mass to transfer energy. So it's not really a selling point. It's behind other things. Comfort first, flex first, energy, performance first.
Okay.
You know, those issues. Weight, not so much anymore.
You want to respond to any of that? We good?
Pretty good. I mean, just one like weird data point. Like, I think one of the reasons the lightweight thing kind of caught on at first.
I'll get closer, sorry. Was because it's really hard to measure ski boot performance in a store, right? How many of us actually demo ski boots? Like, very few. Other than today, yeah. But everybody can pick up a boot and go, whoa, that's lighter than the other one next to it on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was some immediacy that people got out of it. It wasn't
yeah.
just a story. Like, they kind of felt it, right?
Yep.
And that's, I think, just kind of why it got really interesting for a little bit. But then as they went and skied it, some were, I mean, we had a lot of really happy people with them. But if anybody was looking for that extra bit of performance, damping, suspension, you know, stability to their boot, those were the first people to kind of say, I wish I would have more plastic in my ski boot type mm-hmm. of thing.
All things being equal, if the boots fit exactly the same, my experience is, you know, when I'm mm-hmm. boot fitting person, we're trying on 5 fits, and the fits determine, yeah, that was really light, but man, it did not fit my ankle. Mm-hmm. So it always goes back to, yeah, it's mm-hmm. going to be the first one pulled off the wall, but it always is fit. And you got to remember, the kid, guy, girl, lady pulling it off the wall is the sales person, right? They've had experience with it, so they look at a foot. We don't go and go, you look like you need a lighter boot. you know, looking at your foot and going, you need something really wide, you know, that is the key metric is a lot of the times the guys on the sales floor, the girls on the sales floor, they're the real deciding barrier there.
Hmm. Hoji.
Mm-hmm. Still here.
Awesome.
Present.
You got a new boot out. I want you to tell us a little bit about it, and then I'm going to let our panelists say why that all sounds awesome or terrible.
Put it on the table.
Are you wearing them?
He's wearing them.
You're Drew Peterson. Yes. Yes.
No, I had a great day of skiing and came in a bit. Right, we shut her down, and then a few tech talks out there and a beer later, and we're hot tinning to get up here, so no time to change. And that's fine. But yeah, probably, I don't know if most people had the chance to come by, and there's a couple guys at the Dean & Fit booth, and I'm kind of the lurking in the shadows around there and jumping in at any opportunity. But yeah, the new boot, the Ridge, it's kind of, I think, it's a very progressive boot. It's bringing a lot of a new closure system, what it's offering. And I mean, my approach to that boot at the beginning 3 years ago to start on the project was like, based off all the experience I've had with all the people who used the original boots and other boots, and like trying to identify what's a real problem that we're experiencing. And that problem was, compressing the shells and doing all these things to try and get that heel like seated properly and have like a consistent foothold on from like your toes back up your instep into your shin. And and so this boot, we kind of, that project, which I guess I was leading unofficially, that was the problem to approach what's the next thing. The idea, the concept was like, how can we make the foothold independent of the shell shape, and the security, and get like a really positive heel hold and a nice consistent surface all the way up from your foot up to your shin. So, this was the starting point, and yeah, we've developed a new kind of dual tongue system with an inside tongue and a cable system to allow you to like micro adjust, and the tongue system is kind of what they call it, the floating tongue, but it's just sliding, which isn't really actually something new, but the innovation, I would say, is it kind of combines like this inside tongue, which some of the Randonnée boots have, but maybe it's not moving. And inside tongues came from, as far as I know, like the rear entry boots in the 80s, because they had just like a triangle box so everyone could get in. And then they had this internal plastic, soft plastic tongue with a cable system to adapt that triangle big box shell to hold the foot. The combination of like an external tongue that's moving with an inside tongue attached to it, it's, the goal was to have like a highly adaptable fitting ability, and also the sliding aspect of it is beneficial for walking. Like all the boots with tongues, like we kind of in the touring world, in the kind of lighter stuff, it's always a gaiter, because you have no resistance. And that's great for walking, but like the closure system's on the forefoot and somewhere on the shin, and like that middle section of your foot is completely open. And like if you're coming from an alpine background, you will never achieve like the proper hold that you're looking for if you're coming from, yeah, that world, the alpine world. So that's kind of the short, long story, I guess.
Great. Does that make sense to you? A new closure system that should provide a better fit.
I'm going to go out on a limb just because I can look at it. Sounds like a rear entry touring boot to me. I have no idea.
I'll show you
cool.
later.
Yeah, cool. Sounds interesting. But, I, you know, without getting my hands on it, no idea. Sounds like.
But to speak to the, like, the what you mentioned earlier with this, the BOA and, like, what we're seeing, like, the cable system to really crank down and, like, try and reduce and compress the hard structure of the shell and like, over-cranking and putting a lot of force on that cable and winding it way in, this works in a different way where, like, you're reducing that volume without trying to compress the shell. And, like, you still have to wind the cable in, but the tension is based on, like, the comfort on your foot and the security on your foot, so you're never going to, like, you won't put the cables through the same initial load. That's kind of the principle there.
Conceptually, does that make sense to you?
excuse me. Pretty good sense. This kind of brings up a good discussion, like more of a general high-level talking point of solutions versus needs. And kind of going back to buckles versus BOA debate even, that people say, well, I don't need BOA, right? Buckles are fine. Mm-hmm. I've heard this argument on like almost every thread on the internet type of thing. And I would agree with you that no one needs BOA because that's not what it is. BOA is a solution. The need is to have a good fitting boot, right? And this is the mistake that a lot of brands make when they're coming up with a new product, whether it's our industry or bikes or cars, whatever, is they confuse needs and solutions. The solution is what we're after, right? A good fitting boot that skis well, that is dry, right? These very high level concepts, right? These are the needs. The solution is a buckle to create the fit, to wrap the shell. BOA is a solution to create the fit, wrap the shell, right? What Hoji just described is a solution to the need of fit. Finding a way to make a new, improve the fit of the boot, right? Because as we'll all pretty much talk about, fit is going to be the number one thing when it comes to ski boots. So this is why BOA is such an exciting thing, or the new system that you've come up with, because we're always chasing a better fit, right? And these things are all solutions to the need of creating that better fit, right? So when you look at it from that way, I totally agree with what Hoji's talked about. Conceptually, it makes total sense, because we're all chasing the need of making a better fitting ski boot. This is just the unique solution that Dina Fit's come up with.
Me?
No. We're moving on.
All right. Hand grenade, too.
I want to knock out a couple questions, and these maybe are shorter answers. And if one of you manages to say something particularly interesting, we'll, like, you know, pump the brakes and run down that rabbit hole. Because we will get to audience questions in a bit here. But because we called this, part of this panel session was talking about what's next, where are we headed, where are the promising or interesting places to maybe go in ski boots. So if the question for each of you was, talk about something where we've just been talking about the importance of fit and comfort. Would you rather, with your, you know, allotted 2 minutes, talk about liner tech or some other element in the fit comfort world space? So you get to talk either about liner tech or some other element of fit and comfort.
Oof. Can I do both? It's an or.
No,
you want an
one.
Or. Okay.
The better one. We don't want your B material.
I think in what we've been talking about for a couple of years now, for sure brands are always going to be looking at, you know, evolving the last of their boot. Like, the last is the internal part that creates the fit, right? But so many good lasts exist, but there's a lot of room on the liner side, to be honest. I think we're going to see more and more advancements in the liner side of things, because the lasts have gotten so good, and there's going to be some really small tweaks that we do in the future on future projects. But it's not like we're like, oh, we have to throw this idea out. This doesn't work anymore, right? From a last perspective. So I think on the liner side is where you're gonna see newer technologies, better materials to create a boot that fits well from the beginning, but one that also retains that fit and holds it on longer, right? To have the best of both worlds. So having that first fit is going to be the challenge of certain brands that were maybe just mentioned, you know, because that's a hurdle that has to be overcome. And what sells or doesn't sell a boot is how things feel when they're compared against five other competitors within the span of 2 minutes.
Well,
you know,
it's an hour and a half.
But, but yes. When you're
I'm
a
good.
Whole boot, no,
I'm
a whole boot fit session will take that long.
Are you guys talking about sex or what?
But you're gonna.
Yeah.
But you know when you bring out three models.
I'll pull three.
So you're gonna try them on, one on the left foot, one on the right foot. And someone's going to tell you pretty quickly which one's not as good. That gets taken off and put back in the box. That happens in 1 minute. Your whole boot fitting section or appointment takes an hour. Assessment takes 20 minutes. But when you're trying on brand A, brand B, that happens really quickly. Sometimes it takes longer, of course. Finding the right boot can take hours. But when you put a boot on that doesn't fit right, you're not keeping it on for much longer, you know? And this is a huge challenge. So you have that part of the puzzle to figure out. Then you have the part of the puzzle to make it customizable so that it fits more people than just the out-of-the-box fit. And then it has to retain that customized fit longer. These are the needs of a liner. We have a solution. Other brands have solutions, right? But those are the needs that will be addressed.
Great.
I'm going to go with liner, but I'm going to bring it back to my concerns with BOA. And this is, it goes to another solution. I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that the liner is simply the most expensive part of a ski boot after you get the molding done. The problem is I've already seen the lines for next year. I've seen pricing for next year. And my fear is that they've jumped significantly in price. A BOA mechanism is a really expensive part of a boot. And in order to hit the price points for the market, I've seen manufacturers decrease the ingredients in a liner. It's not quite as good. So how do you retain? And I think liners are the next thing. I think you're going to see marketing of liners. I think you're going to have, when you go into a ski shop, it's going to be the liner next to it on the wall, because the liner is really what we're talking about. And there's some impressive liners out there. I mean, you know, the aftermarket for sure, but what Matt and some other brands are doing are amazing. And 9 times out of 10, it never gets pulled. I mean, for us, we pull it when we're measuring your foot and checking the volume. But it comes back to how much price increase can I afford in that BOA mechanism, or would you like to put another $25 into the quality of that liner? You know, that comes out to $100-$150 retail. You know, so there's some trade-offs. It's not just a solution. Sorry to go.
No.
I did both.
That was pretty well. That was slick, though.
So you're welcome.
Yeah, that was pretty slick.
It's good wine.
Yeah. Thank you.
By the way, sorry, but this is Hoji's fault. Whoever's gonna win this panel session. Hoji brought up sex. Has anyone had sex in ski boots? You win the panel. You either win or lose, but probably win. But if one of you raised your hand, I was like, well, you just won the panel. So anyway, all right.
Yeah.
I'd never thought about that before. And anyway, all right, let's go back to whatever we were talking about.
I'm surprised there was only one hand that went up.
Yeah, that's that weak.
Yeah.
Weak. Well, my hand went up.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Well, Hoji wins the panel. All right.
I didn't think we were in a competition. We're friends. It's not sudden death.
You?
Absolutely.
Okay. Next. Two. Us? What are we doing?
We're
this just is losing panel
cool side of the table. That's this the cool is the nerdy side of the table. Yeah.
We've established that. I mean, I think we established that a while ago. But
somebody.
This is what happens when you major in philosophy.
Yeah. Right? You don't have sex in ski boots. Yeah.
I call it the welcome fit.
What? Sorry, repeat? Repeat?
The welcome fit, it's a... Yeah. You'll learn about it later, I'll show you.
Product testing.
I'm not going to stick around
for
that
one. Yeah, let's flex.
Next.
Blister Summit After Dark. Your turn, Hoji. Liner tech or... moving in a different realm of the fit comfort range?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, I agree with the lasts. Like, I think the boots are in a way where the lasts are, you know, we kind of, I mean, there's companies measuring millions of feet and that data should help with the pushing the needle forward to coming up with a commonality of, you know, what's going to work with the most amount of feet. But yeah, I think liner tech is cool, and I totally agree. It's, depending on the manufacturer, it's, some companies don't put enough into the liner, or it's like the afterthought. And I mean, in an ideal world, like the prosumer group, probably a lot of people here, you know, like what you always hear is like, well, why can't they just sell the shell, you know? And then we get to choose, because it's such a personal, it's like really your connection with your ski equipment. And I mean, that would be great if we could ever get to that. But it, from a business side, from a manufacturer, that's...
That doesn't work? Everybody's in agreement up here? That doesn't work?
That doesn't work. So, and like, it's in every climate, every environment. You know, like, I just did one of these over in Austria, and I wanted to involve everyone. I was like, so how many people here have tried like any kind of aftermarket liner? And there's like one guy who was a boot fitter, and that was it out of 100 and whatever people. So it just depends where you're at. Like, our culture here in North America, skiing is like a specialty thing from the beginning. It's not built into the overall culture as it is in Europe, and there, you know, like, they just get the boots and they go skiing, and it's just part of it. And like, here it's like you have to seek out skiing or be fortunate to be exposed to it, and then you become like more kind of, you want what you want. So it's the liner thing, like all the requests or the needs, as Matt laid out, it's such a puzzle. Like, the welcome fit, like, can you even get in? Can you just wear it?
Can you call it the welcome
fit?
Yeah,
that's the Italian
welcome.
The welcome fit.
Here's some sex.
Yeah. like when you go in, is it comfortable? You know.
And, wow.
And, but those.
Is that what you ask?
Just to be clear, I have never fit a boot this way. And if my wife's gonna watch this.
I mean, you're very attentive. That's a very thoughtful thing to ask.
Wow. You're welcome. but they contradict all these things. It's really hard. It's like, you want to get in easily, you want it to be comfortable, but that doesn't equate to skiing performance. Oh, I'm trying to be serious.
I don't know what we're...
Why
next
not?
Topic.
So what we've established, 100%, the title of this panel session is sex and ski boots, which I couldn't really be happier about. That's got to be good for like the algorithm, I suppose.
I'm sure so, it'll catch up.
Anyway,
it's when the most popular blister podcast
ever. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sex and ski boots. Okay. Man. Let's see. I want to open this up to audience questions. So if anybody you have questions, you see the mics on the side.
Don't walk in front of the center cameras.
Or you have to buy us all drinks. While people are coming up, let's do this just a couple minutes. Anything specific that our audience should know about on the what's next front? Anything interesting we can divulge? Thoughts, curiosities, opinions? Greg.
Me? Let's see. No, I mean, it's all refinement of what we've been doing. Walk ski mode is going to continue. I won $10,000, $20,000, right? There we go.
Yeah, yeah. Those guys were too scared to show up and pay their bets.
Well, they couldn't afford the flight after. It's just going to be more refinements, you know, scanning feet, getting better lasts, better materials, those things, especially in ski boots. You're going to see refinement. In step, you're going to see different fastening systems, better materials. I do think you're going to see some sneaking in of the old soft boot technology, soft panels for a little bit more give, a little bit more. I've signed some things I can't talk about, but you'll see some things coming in that vein. Not back to the soft boots or the exoskeleton boots, but just you know, a little bit more flexibility and some textiles.
Okay. Let's get to the questions. Concise questions, concise answers. That's what we're going for. Sure. Let's start here.
So I'm actually going to go for a twofer here. The first thing is the one thing we haven't touched on at all is the footbed component. And I work as a boot fitter, and I don't think I'm doing my job if I'm not talking about that. Mm-hmm. There's two ends, the bookends for you guys. One end is the manufacturer. How does that play into your end of the thing? And then obviously from the shop owner's perspective, how do you guys feel that fits in? And then I'm going to sneak in a tech question, heat moldable shells versus shell plastic that you can't mold. Where do you guys come down on that? I tend to lean towards moldable. It gives me an extra tool, but I'd love to hear what you guys have to say.
Let's go fast on heat moldable, and then we'll go to the footbed question.
Yes.
You like heat moldable? You like heat moldable?
to be honest, every ski boot is a plastic that you can heat up and you can stretch it, right? We've been doing that for 30 plus years. Some plastic is just easier, right? And I think that's what like brands like Atomic have really pushed forward since 2013, 14-ish times, are plastics that are going to heat up more consistently, but then also not shrink back. Because if anybody here is a boot fitter, when you do stretch a ski boot, you have to be careful to leave it on the press for a certain amount of time, make sure the plastic reaches glass transition temperature, all these things, so that the plastic retains the shape that you've given it, right? So part of what makes these newer plastics just more exciting for boot fitters is they just retain that shape that you've given them, right?
Quick, you interested? Heat moldable, don't care. You don't care.
I mean, no. I think it's absolutely critical for fitting and for shops and for me but I don't know any boots that I've used that I can't mold.
Uh-huh.
And,
one,
but I got it. Yeah.
Okay.
I can mold depending on what I'm doing. I can use a glove and like push it out and it seems to retain, like I achieve results depending on what part of the boot. But I think I agree, like it's a very critical point. Like the plastic should be punchable.
Mm-hmm. Greg?
Mm-hmm. Like Matt said, everything is heat moldable. The advertised heat moldable ones, they get you 60% there. If you have bone spurs, that kind of stuff, you know, a great boot press is never a bad thing to have. If you have a Kaiser press, you know, everything is manageable. You know, I have one store that has that, and I just love working with it.
You can even cold press boots.
And I bought your presses as well, and I love those, Matt. They're awesome.
Were you impressed?
I bought.
That was good.
Nope.
That was clever.
I bought four of them,
sharp.
Matt. I bought four.
Tonight. Yeah, he's on.
I think the hot ball is a good. Hot balls are. I like that technique.
And oh boy.
I don't see
now
that
we're,
too
now
much.
We're
it's just, anyhow. Next.
Footbeds.
Footbeds. I use them. I like them. I really like, there's a lot of great trim to fit out there. I'm a ski coach, so I'll coach at the Ligeti Wybrek ski camps in the summer. So I get to work with, you know, 7-time gold medalists and a lot of Olympians. You'd be surprised. I know a couple that don't use any footbeds in World Cup boots. Mm-hmm. I know a guy that puts footbeds under liners. Don't laugh. I know a guy that puts footbeds in his socks, which, well, it's genius. You pull out the footbed, you don't get dinged for the height. But it all comes to personal preference. Mm-hmm. I've seen guys where you would lose your mind. They're absolutely grinding to the inside, so they have more ball of foot. It all comes down to sensitivity and personal preference. I can make myself the nicest footbed in the world. I really like something with some flexion in it and softness to it. I think the days in the 80s where they made it out of hard orthoplastic are long gone. You know, a footbed always enhances a boot. There's almost no days where it doesn't. World Cup racers are different because you couldn't put a thimble of water in that boot. There's no room. Their feet are bound, so I wouldn't get too hung up on the footbeds that they use.
Quickly, you two, footbeds?
Yeah, I like footbeds, I agree. I think it adds a level of form fitting, but also the flexible stuff, especially for ski touring and weight comes down to it. And it all comes down to the boot that you're in and how much room you want to take up or not, you know, like just adding a few millimeters under your foot can change everything and make the boot unwearable or make it wearable. So I've used them, different ones, for years. Since I was a ski racer 25 years ago. I think it's, once you get to the level that you recognize that, it's hard to go back. But it's also like, it's easy to go too far with too much support, and then you're depending on your use, but I've had the experience where I footbeds melted or whatever, didn't have footbeds anymore, and then my feet were just cramping like crazy because the arches, the muscles have like given up, you know. So it's very personal.
Yeah,
it's very personal.
Should we move on?
Quick note. big fan of footbeds. I think that should go without saying for most of us, because our feet have evolved as a suspension platform for running away from cheetahs and stuff like that, you know? They have no business being in a plastic cast called a ski boot.
Yeah.
So a footbed really helps create the interface between your flexible foot and the rigid hunk of plastic that it's in. So as a general statement, I'm a huge fan of them. From Atomic's point of view, we put in something into the boot that is a kind of a good starting point, you know? Knowing that good boot fitters are going to pull out whatever we put into the shell or into the liner, because you have your favorite system that you know how to work and operate. So from Atomic's point of view, we try to give a good kind of neutral canvas to it that allows you to work with whatever brand that you like in your shop.
Okay. We just created a new Summit rule. No two-part questions. So you bring your A material, that's it. A material answers only. Obviously, this has been a super professional panel up here where we never got off the rails. So yeah, we expect the same. Actually, much better from all of you. It's unfair, but that's the world. So your one question would be?
Very short. very specific question. Boa on upper cuff on Alpine boots. Is it going to happen?
Greg.
The closure mechanism to get the cable over, because, I mean, that's the part that has to come the whole way apart. I've been thinking about it for a very long time. Boa cannot be the only mechanism there. You're going to need a latch or something that you can throw over. But now you're adding $100 to every boa, which every boot, which now adds $200 to $300 to your boot. I'd rather see it, quite honestly, in liners. If we're going donuts and dollars, I'm giving you a better liner.
Matt.
Just it.
Matt.
It's happening.
All right. That's it. Done.
Yeah, done. Boa, we started testing the boa that you've seen on ski boots since 2018. And from that day, from Boa's point of view, it was always boa on the cuff, boa on the shell. They always wanted to come out with a complete system. Obviously, given COVID and developmental slowdowns, that kind of thing, the first element that came out was the one on the shell. But it will be a release for the 25-26 season. That's when you will see it come out.
Uh-huh. Liner?
Not before that.
Liner or upper cuff?
The plastic cuff of the ski boot.
Okay.
So not an additional part on the liner. That already exists, but we're talking something on the plastic part of the cuff. If you've been paying attention to any of the forums and the chatter that's out there, you would have seen even racers also testing this on the World Cup.
Okay.
I'm going to format my question as Jonathan formats questions.
Oh, no.
You guys have talked about footbeds. You've talked about lasts, both being essential great parts of the boot. We've talked about liners a little bit being a shortcoming. Ski boot manufacturers still sell and send a disposable footbed in the liner. Mountaineer Sports and Verbier only sell shells and custom fit liners. Hoji, I want to push back on you saying that can't happen. Why can't that happen? Thoughts?
And I can help that one too.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you should. I am not a shop guy. Like, I drink beer in the back of the shop. That's about it. So,
for sure.
Just to be clear, that's what we do too. Inventory. So, you know, boot design and standing up here and talking to you, the product life cycle of a boot gets shipped to me. I look at it today. I'm writing orders tonight. It's shipped to me in August. By this date every year, every manufacturer wants to be out of that model and moving on. To bring extra buckles, extra parts, extra liners, the industry, the companies that you think are huge cannot afford to staff, stock, and hold that inventory. You know, everybody's like, well, go back to your manufacturer if they're out of that inventory. That liner, that shell is long gone. There are very rare instances that I can go back and get a liner. The reason their whole gear is made for a complete system, right?
But they, one part of that system's just fully disposable from the get-go.
No. I mean, if I go to Atomic and say, man, I'm buying 1,000 shells at XYZ Flex, and I don't want to
lie. We're talking.
Yeah, he's taking my order. But here's the problem, is what you're talking about is specialized custom boot fitting. They can't hit the volumes that you need for shell only. Because remember, the liner factory still has to pay the workers, right? And they're geared to two systems. So not to go off on a tangent, but it comes down to economics. Everybody likes to get paid. In fact, all my employees like it. Everybody at the factory, they kind of dig it. So these are designed as a component system. It would be like shipping cars without wheels. You know, at a certain point, you know, you can do that if you order 10,000 cars. You can get it customized. But the shops you're talking about, there's not enough volume to hit that tipping point. Does that make
Yeah, good? It makes sense. And I know Mountaineer does a ton of volume, and that's why they're able to do it. You know, they order a lot of shells. But I was just kind of pushing for, like, it takes thinking differently to, you know, if we're always disposing of that crap internal footbed and expecting a great boot fitter to put in that good boot footbed, and we're admitting that the lasts of the boots are good and that custom orthotics are good, at what point do we just do a paradigm shift and also
make just, better liners?
Or abandon your attempts?
Well, what? Well, okay. So,
hot sauce.
So the sorry. Do you want to?
No, let me. From a manufacturer's point of view, what you're asking for is not impossible. Clearly, there are some shops that do this, right? The issue is complexity.
Yeah.
Ski boots are some of the most complicated things to make for how much we sell them for, right? Mm-hmm. Sure, cars are more complicated, but they also cost way more. Mm-hmm. Ski boots, if I make a shell-only program for a guy's 130s, women's 115s, well, his shop goes 100, 120, not 110, 130. So now I gotta have 130, 120, 110, 100. The complexity here starts to build up like crazy. And it's been something, you know, me as an ex-boot fitter, you know, as a shop kid, I had the same question when I started working for Atomic. I'm like, can we do some kind of custom program where it's not custom colors, who cares, but can I build boots for a shop? Mm-hmm. I want a 130 lower shell or a 110 cuff,
yep.
Right? There are some really cool things here that could be done.
Yeah.
The complexity becomes so enormously complicated that it makes it really hard for the shops to stock it. It makes it hard for the brands to stock everything. It would basically mean things just, instead of evolving every 2 years, they would evolve every 6 or 7 years. Like the speed would have to slow down just so we would have stock always for, you know, your shop to call up and say, hey, I need this shell, I need this cuff, I need this liner type of thing. It just gets so complicated that when you look at the Atomic catalog, for example, there are 115 models in it that are in the inline catalog. There's about 135 total because we make SMUs, which are special makeups for certain shops, when they hit minimum quantities. So if a shop wants to order something special out of a catalog, it's 1,000 pairs minimum for us to even push the button to make it, you know? So it's possible. It's totally possible. It's just, can things get enough volume behind them to make it worthwhile for everybody to just get on board with? And that'll be hard.
Calling that good. I promise we're going to do a follow-up Gear 30 podcast along this topic. So let's keep it
moving.
4 hours
coming your way.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Welcome, Fit.
Front row, extra 5 points.
I hope I don't beat a dead horse then with this question, but there's no bad weather, there's just bad gear, right? If I buy a $1,000 pair of jacket and a pair of pants, they better keep me dry. Why do I have to buy a $800 pair of boots that doesn't keep my feet warm in a cold sport?
You're standing on snow.
I get it. No, I mean sure. No, if the answer is I should just buy heated socks and just go that route, I'll do that. But
that seems to be the easiest way right now, currently. No, really.
Yeah.
Thanks. One of the things ski boot brands aren't great at is electronics. And when we do try to make heated liners, this is totally possible, but there's an incredibly high warranty rate. People are worrying about BOA breaking, you know, heated liners. It's a freaking nightmare that just we've been approached many times to go down, but it's just honestly, you don't want that coming your way from a ski boot brand.
And right now. I can tell you, I went down that route with a vendor, and I'm just going to take a guess. A ski boot warranty is under, well, it's like 0.05%, right, for liners. We wound up eating just because of the electronics and the batteries, I'm going to say 20%. Huh. It was the problem. That's generous. The problem is once it's integrated in the liner, now we're throwing out the whole thing. The Hotronics, those kind of stuff under your footbed, great. To go to your problem though, if your feet are that cold, to me, it always comes down to circulation, and that's a boot fit issue. Circulation, circulation, circulation. Because if you're out there and your heart is going that fast and you're having cold feet, there's something else going on.
Okay. Or you're skiing really fast.
Next question.
True 22 shells. Are they happening?
They do now.
Mm-hmm. I have them.
But like,
let's name names.
Well, what are you looking for? Because yeah, I got everything that I make in a 22. But what? Tell me more about what.
The issue I'm finding with a lot of shells is that it's a 23 shell with just like a thicker liner or like mm-hmm. a toe cap or something like that that makes it a little smaller in one direction or one way, but isn't fully a size smaller than the
totally.
23.
Yep. Every 22 that Atomic makes is a true 22 in every sense of the way. We even make true 21s in some of our boots.
You're allowed to brag. Yeah. You're allowed to brag. Mm-hmm.
Some brands are doing that, though, to be honest. They just don't see the return on investment of making, of spending the money to launch a dedicated shell and cuff for that. I'm not justifying it. That's just their explanation for it. I think if you're really serious about making feet happy, you have to have more 21s even in the industry. So I think you'll be seeing that from more brands that are paying attention. Currently, I know of two, Lang and Atomic, that make true 21s in racing, unfortunately. But you're going to be seeing that kind of echo outwards from there for sure.
Yep.
Can we move on?
Sure.
Next. Oh, boy.
Sorry, guys.
This is a boot panel.
Oh, yeah. But no, I love the ski boots. Curious, though, how... This is a serious question, but I want to talk to you guys, like Dynafit and Atomic, about the midsection, the throat of the boot, and how it affects performance. Like, for example, like the Vulcan and Hoji, your pro model, they were really tight and difficult to fit in that area, and now the Radical and the Tyguard are massive. And I know the early generations of like a Hawx Ultra was very difficult for consumers to put on, and now that's a lot easier. And is that change happening because it's hard for consumers to put on boots, and how is that affecting performance?
You want to go first? He said your name first.
Okay, I'm
sorry.
I'm first. Yeah. I mean, on most of the boots you mentioned, like I didn't have I wasn't a voice. Like I provided feedback, of course, but like not designing actually. Like part of the real meat of the design of those boots as far as the fitting the Radical boot is made to be this kind of generalized fit to accommodate a lot of different feet and get in easily and be easy to use. The new boot that we were talking about earlier, kind of that's one of the main problems or requests or like what were the goals that I was trying to get to, was to have something that's highly adaptable and not just built into the last. So it should be relatively easy to get in, pretty high volume, but the foot retention for lower volume feet and skinnier ankles is independent of the last shape. And I think that's a really important thing, and maybe that's like something that all manufacturers will, if it's successful or whatever, but it's a real problem and something, a goal to get to.
Mm-hmm. Good? Yeah. Last two, I have to cut this off in 5 minutes. You guys should ask stupider questions next time, please. Please.
Okay, this panel has talked about different parts of a boot and the complexity of building a boot and how it affects cost. Now, there's one feature with a lot of boots that you haven't mentioned, and that is canting or cuff alignment. Is that a worthwhile feature to have on boots, given the fact that, in my experience, No boot fitter has ever mentioned that to me unless I brought it up.
Very worthwhile.
Okay.
Definitely one of the adjustments that boot fitters either tend to do later in the discussion or sometimes not at all, especially if you go over to Europe. This is kind of a what are you talking about type of adjustment. But again, speaking for my brand, tooting my own horn, all of our boots have dual-sided cuff alignment, meaning it's on the medial side and the lateral side in the adult range for fixed cuff Alpine boots. Walk modes, it gets a little tricky with lining up the walk mode with the pin on the heel. But it's a super important thing because as Jonathan knows, I know, we're very bow-legged. And when you stand in a boot that has the cuff just going straight up, but our legs do one of these, you know, it is just not even comfortable to stand in it, right? So the cuff should be aligned with the leg at the very least. You get a different approach in racing. Racing tends to think about, well, how can I make this boot faster? And that's literally a talking point, is making fast ski boots, which is, wrap your head around that for a second. So cuff alignment takes on a different perspective in the race world. But it's something that if you're looking to eke out those little improvements in your fit, in your comfort, and in your performance, you definitely want to have your cuff alignment checked. 100% correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last question.
Cool. I get the honored to have the last question. Okay, we talked about product market fit, right? Matt, that's what you're saying. The problem is we're trying to get a better fitting boot. Talked about liners, you know, footbeds. Where do y'all think about the future of custom boots, right? What does that look like from a technology or a manufacturing perspective? Does it fit in this repertoire of solutions we have to develop a better fit?
Greg?
Okay, so almost all custom boot fitting is pushing out on the liner, on the shell. I think, you know, as you're getting, literally if I took a mold of your foot and went and built something, I'm taking out the negative spots. We've tried a couple of things along those lines, but you know, it's not gonna be one of those days where you go and scan your foot into a scanner and then we 3D print your shell and the liner and everything like that. That would be the ultimate custom, right?
What's keeping us from doing that?
Materials.
I can answer that, yeah. Well, once you're done, I can help.
No, you knock yourself out.
Quick.
Okay.
We gotta quit.
Yep.
Okay. we 3D print ski boots right now at Atomic. They're not skiable. You can't even put your foot into it without cracking it.
Yeah.
And the materials aren't there yet, and the speed to make it isn't there yet. We make about, roughly speaking, about 2,500 ski boots a day. To 3D print the right shell takes a weekend for us. So not even a pair of complete boots. So the technology for doing this is in its really infancy stages, at least what we can afford, and we can afford a lot at this moment. It's just not quite there yet, to be honest. Materials and time to create.
You all asked amazing questions, really. I want to thank these three because I just don't know a lot of places where a conversation like this happens. And for questions like yours to be asked to people like this, with the amount of experience up here, to people who are shaping ski boot culture right now, it's pretty impressive and pretty cool. And so it's as much crap as I like to give you all sometimes, it's very cool to have this happen. Thank you so much, y'all who were part of this. Lucky you. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
So, did you just hit the table?
Because you all asked.
Yeah,
we were done. The clapping. No.
I'm pretty sure.
Don't you turn on me.
You just said.
We're done. The clapping means we're done.
No,
so,
we have it on video.
This is what we're doing. I went long. That is 100% my fault. Next one is just going to be fun story time with a bunch of really smart, cool athletes. Let's do this. 5 minutes. Use the restroom. Get yourself a drink. Then we have fun as opposed to whatever this was.
Yeah.
So see you in five. Well, that's it for this edition of Gear 30s. Thanks so much to Matt and Hoji and Greg for the conversation. Thanks to the strikingly handsome Justin Bob for producing this episode. And thanks to you for listening. And if you are enjoying conversations like this, then we would love it if you would leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. And that just lets us keep this whole thing going and growing. All right, everybody. I hope you have a terrific weekend. I'm going to be ski touring this weekend. Hope you all are getting outside too. And we will talk to you again real soon.